You are listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is John Elter J. Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hopping here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Live from the Northwest, it is Full Contact Fighter Radio once again. I am your host, Kelsey Moe, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. And joining me, as and you might even be able to hear this, as he pounds his way through feet of snow, several feet of snow, is Brendan Lear in Edmonton, Alberta. Brendan, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm walking my sled dog.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds kind of cold there, buddy. I appreciate you taking some time out. The marvels of technology that you can be wading through snow drifts, walking your sled dogs, and yet still talking MMA with us on FCF Radio.
It's almost unbelievable, isn't it?
Yes. It's. And hearing
if
you sniffle.
If only they could have some technology to keep me from freezing to death.
Yeah.
Maybe. That would be even better.
Or, you know, and the listeners will be able to hear you sniffling away from the Arctic air.
If I go down like, you know, the Shackleford dudes, I may have to eat my dog and have some profound last words on air, so. This could be a good episode.
Yes, one can only hope. Brett, we've got an interesting show today. We've got Patrick Cote coming on the program. I think some people will be interested to hear his thoughts on the whole Ultimate Fighter experience and his loss to Travis Luter. So he'll be joining us. And then as well, we've got Apex Canadian middleweight, or welterweight champion, rather, Rowan Cunningham is going to be on the program as well. He had one of his fights shown on Hardcore Fighting on the Score Network up here in Canada. I guess it was last week. So they'll be joining us on the program as well. And then after we talk to those guys, I'll fill you in and some of the listeners who maybe didn't get a chance to see the pay-per-view down in the States or up here in Canada. It's pay-per-view delayed on Bodog Fight last night, which took place here in Vancouver. So warning to listeners that if they're planning on watching that, we will be discussing the fights if they're trying to not have the results spoiled, etc. So.
And the fight, the pay-per-view is what, tonight or tomorrow night?
In Canada, I don't think it's actually going to be shown until I believe the date was 16th.
Okay.
Right. And then it was shown last night in the States, so some people probably have already watched it and heard about the results, etc. But I was there last night, and yeah, we'll talk about that to wrap up the show. So, Brendan, you get indoors, and we'll talk to you in a little bit here. You're listening to Full Contact.
Sounds like a plan.
You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio. You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the Full Contact Fighter Shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight Shorts, Camouflage Board Shorts, Corduroy and Camo Hats, Hooded Sweatshirts, to the classic FCF T-shirts, Full Contact Fighter Clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF Sticker and Banner Shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF Shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is the Predator, Patrick Cote. Patrick, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm good. How are you doing, good?
Can't complain. I've got a lot of snow out here in Vancouver right now, which isn't the norm, so it's going to be interesting,
yeah,
Patrick.
I don't have any snow in my hometown. That's crazy.
I know. It's been pretty warm out east. I don't know what's going on.
It's strange.
Patrick, my first question for you, and I think a lot of your fans would like to hear, what are your thoughts looking back on the Travis Luter fight now? You've had a couple weeks to sit back and look at the fight, I'd imagine. What are your thoughts now looking back at it?
You know, after the fight, I was a little bit down about myself because, you know, I didn't have that chance to perform well, you know. Travis did his job. He surprised me a little bit because I didn't thought that he was strong like that. But, you know, he surprised me. He did his job, and, you know, I don't want to take off anything about his performance, but I think that I didn't perform very well. But, you know, he won. He did his job, so it was actually, because I didn't perform well in front of my friend.
Patrick, I was surprised watching that fight about how aggressive you were from the bottom on the ground. And I believe at one point you went for a Khmer and gave up a little bit of position. Now, I think people see that as a weakness on the ground, but that's actually a fairly aggressive move. Were you trying to be more aggressive and demonstrate your ground skills that you've been working on for the last couple of years?
Man, I have no idea how I was ready for this fight. You know, my ground game was, it's crazy to say that now, but my ground game was very, very good, and my wrestling too. You know, I passed 2 months to train against the takedown defense, something like that. And it's crazy to say that because, you know, I passed 2 months to train against this situation, you know, and after that he won with this situation. It was very frustrating for me, but you know, I'm still learning. You know, I'm still learning. I'm young, and I'll be better next time for sure.
Patrick, looking back at the Ultimate Fighter experience, you know, you got your first UFC win, two wins over two UFC veterans, Jorge Rivera and Edwin Duiz. Patrick, when you look back at those fights now, which fighter were you more happy with? Which fight did you think you performed the best and demonstrated your skills?
For sure, my fight against Jorge, you know, was good because it was my first UFC win. But I think my fight against Edwin was one of my perfect fights. I did in my career, you know, I was in control for all the fight. And you know, I show a lot of skills in this fight. You know, I show wrestling, ground game, and my stand up. So I think my win against Edwin was a good fight for me because I was able to show a lot of skills.
Patrick, going into the third round of that fight, you dominated the fight, and obviously you won the first two rounds. So what were you thinking? The one thing I did notice about your performance in that fight is that you seem to lack the sort of sense of urgency to put him away and to finish him off and end the fight. Were you playing it conservatively in that third round? Did you want to just take it to decision and win the decision, or was he just tougher to put away than people's impressions might be?
No, you know, I always go for finishing the fight before the judge decision, because, you know, when I fought Lieben, you know, I thought that I won this fight, and the judge decided not to give the decision up on my side. So I always try to finish the fight soon, and I always try to finish the fight with my skill, you know, my knockout or submission. So no, and you know, I always gave a good show except for my last fight in the UFC, and I always try to finish the fight before the judge decisions. You know, it's better for that. You know, you decide if you won or if you lost. You know, you don't put your destiny, you know, in the hand of the other person.
Patrick, have you had any talks as have the UFC? Do you know what's next for you in regards to fighting for them?
You know, the UFC wants me back for sure, maybe in March, but I don't know yet. You know, I just restarted my training today. You know, I took 1 week and a half on vacation, but you know, if you know, I know I have a contract with the UFC, and I'm supposed to have a couple fights. And you know, I think that my next fight will be maybe in March, but you know, it's not sure yet. So I'll be ready for this show in March, and I'll be back for sure. You know, I was a little bit down about myself, but now, you know, I pass over, and I'm ready to fight again.
So Patrick, there was quite a significant cash prize if you would have won that show, but seeing as that's a significant time commitment doing the show, are you compensated enough that you can take a couple months off and train in a comfortable fashion without worrying about money? Was there monetary compensation involved for the fighters who didn't win the final contest?
Yeah, for sure. It was hard to love this fight, not just because it was a lose, but it was it was too because of the money and the title shot and stuff like that. But no, I'm okay. You know, I have a good sponsor, and you know, it's the most important thing I think in this business is to have a sponsor who believe in yourself, you know, in myself. So no, I'm okay. I'm okay, and no, I have a fiance too. I'm not alone, you know, and my sponsor is very important for me. You know?
Now, Patrick, when you look back on the overall Ultimate Fighter experience, outside of the fights themselves, what has it meant for you? And you talked about sponsors. Have you noticed already? Are you getting more calls from media or potential sponsors alike? Is there more interest in Patrick Cote now because of the reality show?
Yeah, I think so. And too, I have a good manager, you know, who worked for me for my sponsor, but. I think, you know, everybody saw me in the show, the top four, and you know, everybody saw me that I was not there for a joke or just for a TV. You know, I came there in very good shape, and you know, I did the finals. So for sure, if you put a product on me, I will represent your company very well.
Patrick, the things that I was thinking when I was watching the show is the first part of the show, we didn't actually see you very much. And all the fighters who we talked to who have lived through that experience, none of them have reflected very positively on the day-to-day living with all the other guys. But what was it like for you being a francophone, not being able to speak French to anyone as you would in your ordinary everyday life? And what was it like having GSP there to actually speak with in French? Was that a lifesaver for you?
You know, this thing was very good for my English first, and you know, no, I was talking to everybody, you know, but you know, the first couple of days, you know, I was more, you know, like a spy, you know, watching people, because you know, you can't like everybody, you know, so you know, I just spoke to a guy who are, you know, I like it, and you know, to be in the house with 16 guys, it was not that bad for me, you know, because I've been in Bosnia for 6 months when I was in the army, so 6 weeks it was nothing for me.
Yeah, you know, Patrick, when you watch the show now and you see the interaction with the guys in the house and people like Rich Franklin, Matt Hughes, do you have any sort of thoughts on now looking, obviously since that time when they were on the show, Rich has lost his title and Matt's lost his title? The show at least depicted that you guys didn't really care for Rich Franklin's attitude while he was there, and there was certainly some controversy with Matt Hughes while he was there. Looking back on that, Patrick, was that an accurate depiction?
You know, everybody know that Matt Hughes is a little bit talky, you know, and especially with George, you know, when each time George was in the same place as him, you know, he always said that just a couple of things, you know, just to he was trying to go to go inside in his head, you know, of GSP, but you know, it was just like that, and just because Franklin, you know, when Rich came in the gym, you know, he came after 1 month, and you know, we had our routine, you know, and he came after 1 month, and he was like, man, this is the training, and the first day he came, it was our day off, so now he came with a cheesy attitude, you know, and everybody in the gym was not happy about that, you know.
Patrick, what was it like watching George St. Pierre win against Matt Hughes? Was that something that you and your team and everyone from Montreal saw in their own future? So is that now, has George done something that you all aspire to? Does it seem more realistic for you guys now?
Yeah, you know, I see myself in this position too, and in a couple of years, you know, in this show in Top Four, you know, I was the best thing for me is because you know, I compare myself to another very good guy, and you know, I beat a good guy, so I know I'm one day able to be a champ like him, and you know, George is one of my best friends, so I was very, very happy to him, and it was not even close, you know, it was a real beating, so I was surprised about that, but you know, like I said to everybody, George is like a fan of me, this guy is incredible, so I'm very, very happy for him.
And what's it going to be like for you, Patrick? It seemed as if you formed a fairly close relationship with Matt Serra on the program. And, you know, George trains some jiu-jitsu with Henzo Gracie. What's it going to be like for you watching two guys that you probably consider friends, Matt Serra and George St. Pierre, fight each other?
Yeah, that sucks a little bit, but, you know, I don't have choice to go with my buddy George. You know, George is one of my best friends, and, you know, I like Matt a lot, but, you know, I don't want to be disrespectful or something like that, but I think that would be hard for him to put some damage to George, because George is, right now, he's the top of his game, and that would be hard for him, but, you know, you never know. When the bell rings, you know, you never know, it's 50-50, so I hope he will do well, you know, against George, but I don't think George will have a lot of problem with him.
Patrick, it was also rumored in the last couple of weeks that the Crow, David Loazzo, no longer has a contract with the UFC. Can you fill us in a little bit about the particulars of that? Is that true?
I heard a same rumor on the internet, something like that. You know, David and I, we don't talk a lot. You know, we know each other, but we are not their very best friends, something like that. You know, it's more George is more friend than me with Loazzo. But I hear the same rumor, and George told me that it's true. So I don't know what's going on with that, but that sucks for him.
Yeah, apparently it's been reported that his MySpace account actually says that he says on his MySpace account that he's been dropped by the UFC. But I haven't, you know, whether those reports in regards to MySpace, I don't know if you can always consider accurate. But Patrick, one question I wanted to ask you, because you have an interesting insight into this upcoming fight, having fought both men. Jason McDonald is going to be taking on Chris Lieben. Do you have a pick on that fight, Patrick? Who do you think is going to win that one?
You know, that would be hard, man. Jason is very good. You know, I beat this guy in last year. You know, last February, last March.
March, yeah.
And you know, this guy is very, very good. And you know, I think my fight against Lieben, I was not the same fighter than I was supposed to be against when I fought Jason. So I put my mind on Jason. Jason is really good, and he's very dangerous, and his ground game is strange, because this guy has so fucking long legs, and you can't be lazy on the ground, because he will catch him. He will catch you with a submission like he did against Herman. Mm-hmm. So I will go with him.
And Kelsey and Kelsey and I both saw that fight against Jason McDonald. We actually, it was one of our opinions that was probably one of the best fights that we saw in that year. So are you going to tune up then before your next fight, or is it just back to training until your next UFC fight?
I don't know yet. You know, I wanted to fight in December, because I wanted to go back in the win road, you know, the very soon after my fight. But you know, I don't know if I'm able to fight in January or February before that somewhere, for sure. If I can too, because you know, now I'm on under contract with the UFC, so I don't know. But you know, if I fight the UFC, if I fight another organization, you know, I will be ready, and I'll be back. You know, losing is the most, you know, the worst feeling ever, and I hate that. I hate that so bad. So I will be 10 times more ready than I was when I fought Travis.
Patrick, my last question for you, I'd like to get your thoughts on another fight that's going to be coming up, and that's between Anderson Silva and Travis Luter. Your thoughts on who might win that fight, Patrick?
Against Luter and Silva?
Yeah.
You know, like I said, you know, Luter surprised me with his strength, you know. But you know, I saw his fight against Pele, and you know, I think Silva is better than Pele. But you know, there's no secret, you know. Travis will try to take him down because he can't stand, he can't stay on his feet against him, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it depends. Travis has a very, very strong ground game, and if he's able to take him down, I think he can win this fight.
Brandon, you have anything else for Patrick?
No, that's it for me, Patrick. Thank you very much, and good luck in your training, and the best to you in the holiday season, and good luck coming out after Christmas.
All right, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Patrick, one last thing. You should consider getting maybe a music group to sing your new anthem that the boys sang for you on The Ultimate Fighter, that Cote Cote. Have you ever thought of that? It'd be nice music for you to enter into the octagon too, buddy.
Yeah, I try. Maybe next time.
All right, Patrick, thanks for coming on the show. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. The debate.
This guy does not have time to sit down like you're doing, watch the replay, think about it. You know, it's not like he can sit back and, you know, Monday quarterback it or whatever the hell, I'm sure, Monday whatever you call it.
The discussion. Well, as far as with Brendan and I both being Canadians, we care to say Hockey Night in Canada hit when we're talking about analysis. A little different than Monday Night Football. We're not too familiar.
There you go. Sure, whatever. Whatever you damn conduct. Cold weather, man. You gotta be tough. But don't worry. Well, warming, you guys are gonna be the place to be in like 10 more years. It's gonna be so hot here in Vegas that I would have to move to Canada.
Full Contact Fighter Radio. More bang for your loony than a six-pack for a toonie. And if you've never been to Canada before, loonies and toonies are what Canadians refer to their $1 and $2 coins as. It's a long, long story.
Hi, guys. This is Jeff the Inferno Joslin, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is the Canadian Apex welterweight champion, Mr. Rowan Cunningham. Rowan, how are you doing today?
Not too bad, thanks.
Now, Rowan, we were just talking a little bit off air, and you were at the Extreme Cage Combat last night in Halifax. Your thoughts on the fights?
The fights were good. You know, there's a lot of tough guys in there, and some of the local guys like TJ Grant really, really impressed me with his skills. He won. Sean Kreiza from Ontario looked really good as well. He really impressed me. Roger Hall, and of course, in the main event, he looked very dangerous. TJ Grant in particular, really impressed with his skill, and I think Canadians are gonna start hearing a lot more about that guy.
Yeah, and then just reading some brief reports on the fights from last night, it sounds like the main event with Roger Hollett and Penny was a bit of a war.
Yeah, it was two big guys, you know, both big sluggers. they both kind of came right at each other, and Roger is just got very dangerous hands. Like, he starts throwing those posters around and people get knocked out. So, like what happens a lot, you don't, in MMA, you don't really kind of see the knockout as often as you might in boxing, because I think once a guy gets rocked bad, he'll try and take it to the ground in a very sloppy way because he's rocked, and that's what happened in this fight, and Penny ended up giving his back and Roger choked him out, but it was only because I think Penny couldn't answer the Roger's stand-up game.
Mm. Yeah, and I'll ask you a little bit more about the Maritimes mixed martial arts community. I know you recently moved there to that area, and I'll ask you about that in a bit, but I want to ask you a few questions first about your own career, and I think a lot of Canadian fans up here in Canada have been able to see some of your recent fights due to the Score television network having being shown some Apex fights and your last fight against Jordan Jewell. Back on your last your last win over Jordan. What are your thoughts on that win for you, Roan, and then where does it rank in your career thus far?
Well, it was a big win for me. Jordan is a very, very tough customer, and he's real scrappy. And it was a close fight, and I think it was an exciting fight, and it kind of introduced me to a lot of new fans and attention, because people kind of like the hardcores knew who I was, but now my name's kind of getting out there because of hardcore championship fighting and Apex. You know, I get a lot of emails and calls from old acquaintances, and they're like, "Holy smokes! I turned on the TV, and there you were." And so, I'm kind of getting some attention that way, which is neat. You know, it's neat to be appreciated for all the hard work you put in, because it's been a long time kind of getting here.
Right, and that's the thing I was going to mention. That I mean, your MMA record is 4-1, so you don't have a lot of fights, but you're a very well accomplished grappler. Plenty of titles and credentials in that aspect of martial arts. Maybe tell us a little bit about your background, Roan, and your history before you moved to the Maritimes.
Well, for about 8 years, I was training at Joslin's Martial Arts Club in Hamilton, Ontario, and pretty much just training exclusively Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and submission grappling. And that was kind of that was where I first took off in the competition scene, where I just doing as many tournaments as I could, you know, flying to like the Pan Ams and going to Naga and Grappler's Quest and competitions like that to try and better myself and fight better in competition. And I was, you know, on a national scene, I was very successful. You know, one of the top ranked submission grapplers and jiu-jitsu players in my weight class. And internationally, kind of not part of that A group, you know, the elite few, but definitely, you know, in amongst a kind of glut of very decent grapplers and submission wrestling and Brazilian jiu-jitsu, that is. And then after doing that for about 7-8 years, like I said, I moved to the Maritimes, where I didn't have, you know, the same level of competition and training partners. Obviously, training with Jeff Joslin and Rick Amendola, Gavin Hessen, and really tough competitors like that, I was able to always be pushed. Now I moved into the Maritimes, and I didn't kind of have those tools anymore, and I didn't have Jeff's instruction. So I kind of went off in a different direction, and I started practicing striking, and I don't really have a coach for it, but I'm getting off topic. We were talking about life in Hamilton. Sorry.
That's all right.
But yeah, that's basically what my grappling career was all about when I was in Canada, Ontario.
And when you look at your career, it's kind of one thing that kind of strikes right away as far as your mixed martial arts record is that you've, in five fights, you've had two fights against Eric Bellew. How did that come about? Was it just a situation, you know, circumstances?
Yeah,
had you guys fighting twice?
Just kind of a weird circumstance. My first fight was against Eric, and that went well for me. I took him down and choked him out in about 2 minutes. And then for the Apex tournament fight that they were having, Alex did a random draw for the four of us, so I could have been paired with either Bellew, Motard, or Jewel, and it just happened to be Bellew. It was like a random draw, and that's who I got paired up with. So, you know, no, there's no animosity there toward Eric or anything like that. We're cool with each other. It's just the way things turned out.
And then your only loss came to Garrett Davis. You lost him by submission in the third round, and Garrett's a well-known fighter from the West Coast versus where you're from the East Coast. And Garrett also has a jiu-jitsu background, trained under Marcus Suarez through Carlson Gracie jiu-jitsu lineage. What are your thoughts looking back on that fight, Roan? And for people who didn't see it, maybe give us a brief summary on that fight and your thoughts on it.
Well, I went in there against Garrett, and I just, first of all, I underestimated him. I didn't think he was going to be as talented a fighter as he was. And I ran into cardio problems at the end of the first round. Fighting hard for underhooks, I really burned my arms out, and he proved to be very difficult to take down. And so then I was left in, having to strike with him. And it's not something I feel a lot more confidence in now, but at the time I didn't have that confidence. And basically gas got the better of me. He had better cardio than me, and ended up getting a guillotine choke on me in the third round after a tough fight. And he's a great guy too, and we've talked about it, and we'll cross paths again. We'll have a party, and that's for sure. And maybe in the Apex Federation, maybe for the belt, if I can hold on to it for a while.
And Garrett, originally also from the Maritimes, from Newfoundland, get kind of back full circle here into the mixed martial arts community out there, and that fight occurred, and I believe it was the first Extreme Cage Combat card, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
And so how has that grown? I mean, I know you mentioned the fact that it's kind of tough where you live to find training partners, etc., but, you know, mixed martial arts, the ECC, it's growing here, about Team Titan from Halifax. Is mixed martial arts on the rise out there in the Maritimes?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I ran into guys, you know, just at the show last night, it was, you hear about one gym and they have, like, you know, two or three fighters, and they're from, you know, Amherst. I didn't even know there was a martial arts club in Amherst, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's all types of kinds of MMA schools popping up all over the place. So, yeah, I mean, it can't not grow. It's just becoming too big, too popular.
And do you know what's next for you, being the Canadian welterweight champion for Apex? Do you have anything signed coming up?
Nothing signed. They'd asked me to compete in January, and I wanted to some time to resharpen my skills. So I'm not going to be fighting in January. Kind of working some other areas of my game.
And then, of course, coming up, you train extensively on with Jeff Jocelyn, and he's got a big fight coming up against Josh Koscheck in, I guess, December 13th, so it's right around the corner. And, I mean, I know you're going to go with the trainer there, but what's your pick on how do you see that fight unfolding between Jocelyn and Koscheck?
Jocelyn Koscheck? I see Jeff basically bullying him around the cage in the stand-up. Koscheck getting frustrated because, again, it's real hard to hit Jeff. Like, he's a very, very elusive fighter, and that can be really frustrating. And I see Koscheck as somebody, you know, who's throwing the big punch. You know, he's winding up with the haymaker all the time, and I don't think he's going to be able to touch Jeff with it.
You think Jeff's wrestling is going to be good enough to keep the fight standing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I think Koscheck's chances lie in immediately trying to take Jeff down and ground him out. I think if he stands and tries to trade with him, then he's going to get himself in trouble. And then, you know, you're kind of halfway into your match, and you got to try and change gears, and it's just not that easy.
Yeah.
You know, your arms aren't as fresh, your legs aren't as fresh, and take two fresh guys, one guy trying to take the other down, he'll get him down more often than if those two guys are tired. You know what I mean? Like, it's easier to defend the takedown when you're tired than it is to try and do a takedown when you're tired. Yeah, you know, I if Koscheck tries to stand with Jeff, I think he's toast.
And Jeff Jocelyn, of course, is the Apex World Welterweight Champion. And what did that mean for you, Rowan, to see one of your friends move on to the UFC? Jeff was somewhat of an unknown commodity here fairly well-known commodity, I guess it's safe to say, in Eastern Canada, but perhaps outside of that, not so well-known, and had the memorable split decision loss to John Fitch, and some people thought Jeff won that fight, especially up here. And to see him going on to the UFC, what did that mean to you?
To be honest, like, I felt confident it was going to happen. I mean, if Jeff wanted to happen, it was going to happen. Like, he is far, far too good not to be noticed by a major federation, either the UFC or Pride or K1. Like, I mean, his talent is just
glaring, you know. Mm-hmm. Just on his talent alone, he could he should be getting his crack. But then on top of that, you know, he's got a lot of other kind of charismatic features going for him, and you know, looking good on TV. Like, he's just totally natural fit. You know, he should be there. So I'm not surprised that he's there.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm rooting for him all the way. I mean, I owe Jeff a huge debt of gratitude for all the training he's given me and the skills that I've acquired through him. So yeah, he's gonna bust him up. It's gonna be great.
Yeah, it's definitely gonna be interesting. We'll see what happens on the 13th. Well, Rowan, we appreciate you coming on the program, and we look forward to seeing you fight again and defend your title in the new year.
Thank you very much.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
FCF Radio has been on the air now for a few months, and we just wanted to thank everyone for the feedback and support. The show is now available for download or subscription on iTunes. It can still, of course, be heard at fcfighter.com. If you have any questions for me or Brendan, please email your questions, suggestions, and feedback to radio@fcfighter. Again, that's radio@fcfighter.com. On one other note, if you're emailing to find out if, in fact, there were two teams in the CFL with the same name at the same time, yeah, it wasn't a bit. We weren't lying. Ottawa Rough Riders, Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Don't be a lazy skid. Just go look it up if you don't believe me. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. And, Brendan, it's kind of strange how, you know, you come in, we do the interviews, and now you got to be on your merry way, and you're talking to us via your car now. It's weird how that works out.
No, I'm just happy to be sitting in my car because I was freezing to death.
Right.
I'm not actually driving in my car.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
I basically have the competency to receive a cellular phone call, but could never, ever actually walk or drive while speaking on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Well, and for all the listeners out there, safety's always first, buddy, and we appreciate you. And I've been in a car with you, and your driving skills are quite awesome. Quite poor to begin with, so... If you try to incorporate talking on a cell while you're driving, plus the Arctic weather, polar bears, and the roads and whatnot, you're asking for a very dangerous situation.
And you're asking, in criticizing someone else's driving, you're asking for some devastating secrets about your own driving to be revealed.
Well, I beg to differ. All right, we'll change the topic. Brendan. You know, I guess first off, just quickly talking about the Patrick Cote interview, and you could definitely tell that Patrick was very disappointed with his performance against Travis Luter, and talked about this when we had shortly after Travis Luter Patrick Cote fight. Most people had said if Travis gets the fight to the ground, he's going to be able to submit Patrick, and sure enough, that's what happened. But I think just the fact that it ended so abruptly, and Travis got Patrick to the ground fairly quickly, even Patrick admitted in the interview that. Perhaps he'd underestimated the strength of Travis.
Yeah, I thought if anything, Cote would learn to use his jiu-jitsu just basically only in a defensive way. You know, try when he went down or if he found himself down, basically defending submissions and then trying to get back up where he had the best chance of winning the fight. But he seemed very active from underneath, especially when. But it was very unusual to see because you never, you know, when is the last time you ever saw a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt? Be submitted from on top by a Kimura, you know,
mm-hmm.
with someone on the bottom in half guard or something like that. So it was fairly, I'll say aggressive move, and many other people will probably say, you know, probably will say haphazard or a reckless move. So now I kind of wanted him to clarify that a little bit, what exactly he was thinking about. But
well, it'll be interesting to see what the UFC does with him next. They, you know, Patrick said that he's hoping to fight for them in the spring sometime. And you see a few Canadian fighters now in kind of that predicament up here. Of course, there's so many UFC cards now, and there have been, it sounds like in 2007 they're going to have just as many as they did in 2006. But you see fighters like Mark Hominick, for example, who's going to be fighting in Colorado right away because, you know, he wants to stay active and he hasn't been offered a UFC fight. And we asked Patrick about the possibility of him fighting before the spring because, he, you know, at that point it will be four months or so before he would fight. And it sounded to me like he would prefer not to have to do that. He'd rather fight in the UFC sooner than later.
Well, I think every fighter is different, and it's actually kind of disappointing to see sort of higher-level fighters fight so few times in 1 year, like two, maybe three at the max.
And I don't think MMA, you know, I think training MMA is just as potentially damaging as fighting, so I don't understand why they wouldn't want to fight some more, at least maybe four times a year. But, I'm not sure how that's gonna work. I think MMA is certainly a sport where you could fight four times a year, if you were training full time. There's no doubt about that. I mean, you know, there's lots of people who fight 12 times a year, 15 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, it'll be interesting to see what kind of equilibrium is established, especially, I know that's difficult inside the UFC because they do have a lot of events, but they have a lot of fighters as well. So it'll be more interesting to see if contracts kind of loosen up and exclusivity kind of loosens up, how many fights fighters will choose to fight rather than have to or are allowed to.
Well, that's exactly it. And then, of course, you see some fighters who are hesitant to fight before a UFC card for fear of getting injured, etc., and the UFC, by way of exposure, is going to be their first choice. But certainly, when you look at someone like Patrick Cote, you know, there's a TKO card in February, and Patrick Cote was the light heavyweight champion there. Of course, now he fights at 185, but a very popular fighter in Quebec. And, you know, he didn't say this in the interview, but you would assume that both TKO and himself would probably love the chance to compete at the Bell Center in Montreal on the February 9th card.
Yeah, that would be a nice little draw for that card, too, as well. But we'll see. Well, it'll be interesting. That would be a nice. That would obviously be a perfect fit. But we'll see how the politics surrounding that work out. Certainly, the organizations do have some kind of, collaborative agreement. However loose or tight that is, will remain to be seen.
And then last night, Brendan, I was at Bodog fight last night, the pay-per-view show, pay-per-view event, Team USA versus Team Russia, and then of course the big super fights. And it was. Unfortunately, some of the fights, Brendan, weren't overly exciting. There was a couple highlights throughout the night. And for me, just to see that kind of international mixed martial arts contingent here in Vancouver, which is not, I'll be the first to admit it, Vancouver is certainly not known to be a mixed martial arts hotbed in the scope of the Canadian mixed martial arts scene. So it was interesting to see local media there. There was quite a bit of international media, a lot of mixed martial arts media here in Vancouver, as, you know, the city hosted Bodog.
How was the event? How was the production of the event itself?
Well, I thought the production was very good. It was very somewhat over the top, of course. I think anyone who saw the show with Bodog, the internet show, or on the Fight Network, if you've been watching it, or for that matter, if you've even seen they've obviously got a lot of money behind the promotion, lots of marketing, advertising. So there was a lot of that, a lot of theatrics, pyrotechnics, special effects. They did a great job of setting up the P&E Agrodome, which is an older, smaller hockey rink right beside the Pacific Coliseum where the Vancouver Canucks used to play in sort of the eastern side of Vancouver. So they did a good job of making the arena look nice. The show was put together really well, no delays. So that side of it was good. They were very media friendly, which I really appreciated. I had great seats. We had a photographer there for Full Contact Fighter Mike. He was allowed to get, you know, ringside to get shots. All the other media as well. They're very accommodating, mixed martial arts media as well as the Vancouver Sun and Province were there. So that was great too. Their liaisons between Bodog staff and us, the media, was great. They were very accommodating. So I thought that was good. Of course, you know, I was at the event, so I didn't get to see the pay-per-view side of things or hear the commentating, etc., so I can't vouch for that end of things. And I got to tell you, man, I mean, for people who maybe didn't see the weigh-in photos or didn't see the pay-per-view, I mean, Waterman weighed in at 275 on Friday, and just a huge muscle, you know, muscle-bound, massive, imposing figure. And then you've got Gracie, who weighed in at 220, and he's tall, but very slender, not a lot of muscle, and you could when they were in the ring and getting the referee's instructions. I mean, you could hear the crowd just gasping and awing about the size difference.
So he gave up 55 pounds.
Yeah, and I think I was somewhat surprised. You know, Waterman, of course, got a wrestle. He's known for having some wrestling capabilities. There's no question about it. But he immediately went for the takedown. He didn't really try to stand in exchange with Gracie at all, and he quickly was caught in an armbar attempt by Gracie, who looked very calm and collected considering his mixed martial arts debut. And Waterman slammed out of the first one, but then only about a minute later or so, he tapped to another armbar. And Gracie looked good, and in the dealing with the media, etc., it must have been somewhat overwhelming for him. I mean, I know he's competed in such big events like the Abu Dhabi submission grappling tournaments, etc., being the 2005 champion there in a couple divisions. He's probably used to dealing with the media to a certain extent, but there was definitely a big swarm in the press room after his fight.
And what about the other super fight?
Yeah, there's Eric Pelle versus Antonio Silva, and there's, you know, a lot of hype about the Brazilian super heavyweight Silva. He had been undefeated, training with the American Top Team. He had Jay-Z Cavalcanti in his corner, Dean Thomas. And going up against Eric Pelle, who people probably have seen, if you haven't seen him fight through via King of the Cage, I think he's most known for that tattoo show on A&E nowadays. But, you know, it was an exciting fight, kind of controversial. Silva had him on the run early on and landed some pretty good shots and literally had Pelle on the run. At one point, he was running across the ring. And from my vantage point, it was kind of hard to see exactly what happened. They were at the opposite side of the ring at this point, but he sort of spilled into the ropes, and Silva looked to me as if he was landing some shots down on top of Pelle, but they were almost falling out of the ring, so the referee stopped the action. But when he restarted it, he had them restarted standing. He didn't put them back in the middle of the ring in the same, you know, in the ground position. And I'm not really sure on the particulars of that, because when any kind of grappling, etc., occurs normally throughout the whole night. It's not like TKO rules, etc., where if they just get underneath the ropes, the action is restarted standing. Throughout the night, they were repositioning them, moving them back into the center. And for some reason, this time, however, the fight was started restanding. And then Silva, seconds after the fight was restarted, actually inadvertently hit Pelle with a leg kick, or an attempted leg kick, hit Pelle low blow. So Pelle had a few more minutes or seconds to recover from that. He was given some time to recuperate. And then after that, Silva, you know, was pursuing him again, and Pelle dropped him with a right hand, got on top. Landed some pretty hard shots, but it certainly wasn't a flurry of punches. And Silva looked like he was getting hit a bit, but he didn't look like he was, you know, he certainly wasn't going in and out of consciousness or anything like that. But you know, Pelle had a lot of force behind the punches, and the referee stopped it, and the American Top Team seemed quite upset with the stoppage. And fans were pretty jacked and pumped up at the time, because Pelle kind of had the, you know, the nice comeback that I think fans like to watch. But after the replay was shown of the stoppage and the referee intervening, there were some boos, etc. But it was certainly, I would say, that was one of the bigger upsets of the night. Silva, a lot of hype, and now he has his first loss.
And he was Silva was they were sort of being groomed to be the next sort of big thing at heavyweight, no?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he, as far as fighting in Vegas, he weighed in, I believe, at 296 on Friday, so he would not be able to compete in the UFC heavyweight division, for example, which is going on to 265. So he was a big guy, and I think Eric Pelle weighed in at 309, I believe, on Friday, so...
309?
Yeah, I mean, the guy's huge, man. I'm sure you've seen him before, but...
Well, I've seen him fight in King of the Cage a couple of times, but I didn't know he was that heavy.
Yeah, he's definitely in the super heavyweight realm. A couple other notable highlights of the night. Eddie Alvarez, who is the MFC, the Mixed Fighting Championship, the Eastern States version of an MFC, not the Canadian MFC. Welterweight champion took on Aaron Riley and knocked him out in quite dramatic fashion. Started with an uppercut and led to flurry punches, and that really got the crowd going as well. But outside of that, and some cheers for some local fighters who pulled off some wins, like Todd Gallenberg knocked out Ron Faircloth, looked impressive with a stand-up, and then Rob Velik, who's another Team Revolution local area fighter, he won his fight impressively too. Outside of that, there were some pretty slow, methodical fights. Chael Sonnen, you know, looked impressive with his wrestling, but it was not exactly a crowd-pleaser in his fight against Olenek from the Red Devils. Mike Pat beating Malkasian. He actually kept that fight standing a lot. Did a nice job of throwing some leg kicks, I think, which Malkasian probably didn't expect coming from Pat. He was more known for a ground game, I suppose. But some of the Team Russia, Team USA fights were a little bit boring. The Rinaldi fight against Kozlovsky, fans kind of rallied behind Kozlovsky, who is more of a kickboxer, trying to keep the fight standing, and Rinaldi was taking him down, showing good wrestling. That fight was pretty slow. Went to decision. Rinaldi got it. Zenin Vladimir Zenin looked impressive knocking out Nick Aguilar, but yeah, there was a few fights that the crowd was booing a little bit. It was interesting too, Brendan, they didn't serve alcohol at the event last night, so I thought that was an interesting twist on things.
That's how refreshing.
Yeah, as we walked up, there was a big sign saying, you know, this event will not be serving alcohol, and I'm not sure where that is. I've been to several shows in Vancouver, and they, of course, usually do serve alcohol. I'm wondering if perhaps we do the fact it was a pay-per-view. They wanted to definitely keep a lid on any potential crowd disagreements that sometimes occur at Canadian events. I'll be curious to see the pay-per-view. You know, it'd be interesting to see the production value behind it, how it looked, and I'll also be curious to see what happens with pay-per-view buys, you know, whether or not people in the States are getting into Bodog. Certainly a ton of money behind it, and now, Brendan, you know, there's some reports, you know, SureDog.com was reporting that Fedor is going to be fighting for Bodog March 3rd, but they just had a Bodog source listed. There was no name given, and I haven't seen a press release, etc., from Bodog. Have you?
No, I haven't, but it sounded like I think it was either on one of the big sites, they had some fairly specific details. Mm-hmm. The story I read was that this is Fedor had one remaining fight on his Pride contract, which is, of course, New Year's Eve, and he also has an exemption in his Pride contract to be able to fight in Russia.
Right.
So for any organization, so it'll be interesting to see what happens after that, which way Bodog wants to go with promoting MMA, and whether or not Pride can step up now without a TV deal in place and with some I don't want to say financial uncertainty, but certainly not the business arrangements that they like to have to go to renegotiate a contract with probably their most important athlete. So.
It'll also be interesting to see how far Bodog definitely pushes this. As you mentioned, it seems like a lot of people that are around Pride, involved with Pride, are rallying to the defense, making sure that no alarms are sounded in regards to whether or not they are in financial trouble. But certainly, if Bodog really wants to push the boundaries of mixed martial arts in terms of signing up bigger name fighters to lucrative contracts, etc., they definitely seem to have the pockets to be able to do so.
Yeah, and I guess the question is right now, because, you know, the UFC and Pride have carved out these enormous territories and have all these fighters under contract. How do you start off a new promotion? Do you have a bunch of nobodies and then Fedor fighting in a fight against some other nobody, you know, in your first show? Or do you have to sort of build these things up slowly? Or do you have to sort of start with the slim collection of people who are unsigned or looking for new contracts? And so it's tough, you know. It's more natural to build up grassroots promotions and get a sort of naturalized fan base behind you. But as we saw with the WFA, you know, their attempt to do their first big show met with limited success. They had some success, but it certainly wasn't a blockbreaker blockbuster by any means. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how, if Bodog is going to go for it.
What exactly transpires, and when you deal with a commodity like Fedor Emelianenko, who's actually created quite a reputation for himself, even within the United States, I think that was shown by, you know, the Pride's North American debut, that a lot of people seem to be familiar with him. It's somewhat hard to imagine that Pride would not try to rally some sort of resources to sign him up. Because he definitely, you know, regarded as the best fighter in the world by most, to actually think that he might not be fighting for them anymore at this point seems somewhat hard to believe, but if the money's not there, I suppose the money's not there.
Well, it's terrible to think about, because who else could they, you know, there's obvious fights that Fedor still, unfinished business that Fedor still has in Pride. I think so. It would be terrible to think of him leaving Pride, especially if they couldn't. Pride basically has, you know, four or five best heavyweights in the world. So it would be terrible to think of him leaving without them having any legitimate competition for him to go up against.
Yeah. Well, Brendan, on that note, I'm going to let you start up your car and drive home and turn off your cell phone so you can drive in a safe and proper manner.
I will as diligently as possible.
All right, buddy. Okay, well, we'll talk to you later in the week.
And have fun overcoming your MMA hangover.
Thanks, buddy.
Talk to you later.
Okay, see ya.